on what I think is our last meeting day. We just have Senator Hoffman, Senator Buddy just stepped out, Senator Olson's walking in the room, Senator Dyson's here, Senator Stedman, Co-Chair Wilken, and myself, Senator Green. We have a couple of things on the agenda today. One is, first is House Bill 109, screening newborn for hearing audiologist. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair, Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Ramirez, and he apologizes for not being able to attend personally.
Jane, would you pull that microphone up just a little closer, please?
Each year in Alaska, approximately 10,000 babies are born. 30 to 40 of these children will be born with congenital hearing defects. Hearing loss is more prevalent than any other birth defect. Studies have shown that children with a hearing impairment not detected at birth will likely not have the impairment detected until they are 2 to 3 years of age. Unfortunately, these studies have also shown that the most critical time for speech and cognitive development is from birth to age 3 years. House Bill 109 will require infants to be screened for hearing loss before leaving the hospital or within 30 days of being born, if not born in a hospital. HB 109 will further provide diagnostic intervention. A child who fails an initial hearing screening will be referred for rescreening. And once a child has been diagnosed with a hearing impairment, parents will be provided by the Department of Health and Social Services with written information on the availability of services throughout community resources, government agencies, parent support organizations affiliated with deafness, counseling and educational services, and programs offered through the Department of Health and Social Services, the Department of Education and Early Development. Ultimately, this bill will save the state of Alaska money due to the fact that infants who are not identified with hearing impairments and aided early will most likely require special education for the child's lifetime in the school system. When hearing impaired children reach school age, they become the fiscal responsibility of their respective school districts. The cost for educating a special needs student can range up to $12,000 a year, high over the base student allocation. Finally, for these reasons, we encourage you to pass House Bill 109. Thank you.
Any questions for Jane? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. What are the penalties for those newborns that, I guess, don't have this screening done?
There are no penalties for the doctors. It would be required. The parents can opt out of the program if they choose not to be part of the program.
So it's a voluntary?
Yes.
Madam Chair, if I could continue on, one of the difficulties that we have with hearing impaired children that I've seen in my clinical practice were those children that became hearing impaired after they were newborns, mostly because of otitis media and some of the difficulties that go on in the inner ear with the ossicles that are there. How would this address that problem?
Senator, I am not exactly sure, but there are people from the department online, okay, and maybe they'd be better to answer that question.
Primarily, this takes care of, this is a registry for newborns. I mean, it creates information going out to newborns, and it creates, I think, way too much bureaucracy in the Department of Health and Social Services, but maybe Dr. Monsager could, by the way, we do have this on invitation only for just because of the time constraints that are involved in our schedule. Dr. Monsager, did you answer the question that Senator Olson asked?
This is Dr. Monsager. I'm speaking from the NOMAIL IO today. Thank you for the opportunity to talk for just a very few minutes. Thank you for considering House Bill 109 and for hopefully taking another step in assuring Alaska kids their best future. In answer to Senator Olson's question, this bill really is a bill about newborn congenital hearing loss, not about acquired hearing loss later on in life. However, there are high-risk kids that will be followed in this registry, primarily kids coming out of the intensive care nursery that due to their antibiotics or other medicines they've been on, that they're at high risk for hearing loss to follow them too. The reason this bill, I think, has been under some dispute here toward the end of its journey has to do with exactly the question that Senator Green just raised, is does it add enough benefit for the cost of the program? From my point of view, this bill, if passed, would do a couple of things. One is it'll make sure the kids are screened immediately after birth. Two is it will give us the ability to connect parents with newborn hearing services within the first 6 months of life. Back before we had any newborn hearing screening in this state, 5-6 years ago, the average age of diagnosis of congenital hearing loss was somewhere between the ages of 2 or 3. Now, since we've been in the era of voluntary screening, for the 80-some percent of kids that are screened, their age of diagnosis now in connection with services is somewhere less than 1 year. The goal is to get kids and their parents connected with the services that the parents choose within 6 months of life. The data across the world has really been steadily amassing over the last several years that the earlier we can help kids and their parents get good communication services, the better their educational and other potential for life is. I think that this bill strikes an appropriate balance between the cost and the services and helping parents make the choices that are appropriate for them as to what communication technology they choose for them and their family. I'm available for questions.
Are there any other questions of Dr. Monsager?
Madam Chairman, the reason I brought it up was because there was a comment made that special education costs for the child once they get to school are up in the range of $420,000. I guess the question I have for you is, what's the percentage of children that have congenital hearing loss as opposed to that have acquired hearing loss once they get to school?
Senator Olson, through the chair, probably the numbers of kids that have mild hearing loss would be more on the acquired side. As you correctly noted from chronic otitis media, et cetera, in the ages of 3 to 5. However, the kids that have profound hearing loss, the majority would be from congenital problems before birth.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, Dr. Mansager, this is Dyson. As I recollect, you told me that we're already screening newborns for some 70 different kinds of conditions. Did I remember that correctly?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, it's not quite that many. We're now up in the upper 30s. It was expanded 2 years ago from about 9 up to the upper 30s. The years to come, as more tests become diagnosable on the newborn metabolic side, I expect that number to grow in the years to come. Probably the next one will become cystic fibrosis.
And if I may continue, what do you expect it will cost to do this per child, to do this hearing screening?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the hearing screening cost in the hospital or in the first month of life is somewhere around $30 to $40 per child. Diagnostic testing, confirmatory testing for the kids that fail screening is substantially more, but that is reserved for kids that fail the initial screening.
Thank you. Oh, and one last thing. What does it cost in terms of equipment to do the initial screening and the training of the folks who do it?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I'm not exactly sure. The last I recollect was the typical screening machine that's in hospitals and public health centers is somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000. The training is a couple of hours. When I worked at the Alaska Native Medical Center, the nurses were initially trained by folks that came in, and then since then, most of the training is one-on-one from nurse to nurse within the institution.
Thank you, sir.
Are there any other questions? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard this bill back in early March in Hiss, and the problem I've had with the bill, and I've been clear with many that have talked to me, it's not that I'm against newborn screening, it's about adding to the bureaucracy and something that this time of year I call feel-good legislation. Feels good when you pass it, but the fact that you have to ask the question, do we really need it? So I walked down this logic. At the Hess meeting, in our packets, we had this for those that aren't on Hess, and I asked at the Hess meeting, these are all the places you have births in Alaska. And I forget what the number was, 10,000. And it shows here, it shows each hospital, each clinic. And so I asked, are all of these places doing newborn screening? And the answer was yes. And I said, okay, then who are we not capturing? What children, what newborns are we not capturing? Well, we think there's some in our home births, but the testimony was that our midwifery system seems to take care of that. So I was left with the impression, and I stated to a number of people, that we may not be not testing any children in Alaska. So I pressed on with some information as to who we were going to capture here at the expense of increasing the bureaucracy. So that went back and forth, and the department, I had told a couple of folks, department needed to weigh in. So they did on May 5th, and I think you have that in your packets. And I think when you read that, it's based on averages, it's based on statistics that aren't particularly relevant to Alaska itself. And this from the department that came last Friday essentially parrots a email I got from the March of Dimes back in late March when a very nice lady by name Ms. Golden and I were discussing this issue. So I'm not sure the department has done their homework as to where we think these children are slipping through the cracks. We were told at Hess, and Senator Dyson just mentioned it, that all the places that do newborn screening have a suite that is newborn screening, and they do this anyhow. And so then the question becomes, well, if they're doing it anyhow, why do we need a law that tells people they have to do it and put in place the bureaucracy? So, Madam Chair, in summary, I still don't think legislation is needed. I mean, it's a nice legislation, makes you feel good. But I think we capture all these kids anyhow, and the balance is to increase the state bureaucracy for some thought that perhaps we're not. And with that, Madam Chair, I just won't be supporting the bill.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very concerned because Section 2, Section 5 on page 3 is mandatory insurance coverage. And as we know, the only people this mandates actually are people who buy private insurance, who on their own buy their health insurance, are in a small group plan, because anyone else that's on a self-covered plan is exempt from this, as is the state. Understandably, the state generally becomes part of anything we pass as a mandate. And for that reason, I'll be on the floor. If this gets to the floor, I won't be supporting the bill. My biggest, even bigger concern, though, is the bureaucracy created in the reporting and tracking and the information that goes back and forth. And I see it as kind of reaching outside what the department, you know, I'm sure they see that as part of their role. Outreach for people, but I kind of think back at when my children were born, although it's been many, many years. I think I received a report, a little postcard about one thing, and it had to do with inoculations or
MMR.
Something. Yeah. What was that?
I think it's part of MMR.
Yeah. And so I don't know, that's kind of bothersome to me. There doesn't seem to be a huge fiscal note on that portion of it, but are there any other comments, any other questions? Senator Stedman.
Madam Chairman, it sounds like this bill might need some more work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had said that I would have the hearing and I would let the committee decide what the fate of this is. And there are many, many, many very firm supporters of this bill, and I, like I've said, we're not allowing everyone to weigh in today, just in the restriction of time. And I want to tell you, my father was very, very, very hard of hearing. I understand deafness and the impact it has on our family. Of course, we have a grandchild who has a deformed outer ear and will require years of services. So, and it's congenital, but it's very obvious that she has a hearing problem. So I'm not insensitive to it. But I find the procedure rather cumbersome. Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to let the presenter here speak to the, a couple of issues that come up. One is, appears as if no one or almost everyone is getting the service and everyone has it available already. And I enjoy you speaking to what's the problem where you're curing, and then it, what is the, if everyone is, most people are getting the service and have it available to them, and it's they can opt out if they choose, what are we losing by not having the tracking that this puts in place?
Senator Dyson, through the chair. Currently, the statistics I had is that 80% of children born are currently caught through screening. And
in our state?
In our state. And one of the issues that comes up is if there's an unsatisfactory test, is the follow-up is necessary for a rescreening. I don't think there's a doctor in the state that would not try to follow through with the parents, but through the birth process and a lot of things that go on. I've talked to very well-educated parents who had children with hearing impairments or born with hearing impairments, and they really said they didn't know where to go or what to do. And a couple of them said, you know, because there was an iffy test, they really didn't think they would go back for rescreening. And because the state sent them a card, pursued it a little bit, that really changed their mind, and they were very grateful that it did proceed along that, those lines. So.
Thank you, Madam.
So is that being done currently?
Senator Green, currently, yes, there is follow-through, and there is money through a federal grant to produce information that is provided to parents after the initial screening.
And that's from whom? The department?
Through the department. Yes.
Okay. Senator Stedman, did you have your?
No.
Someone else did. Senator Olson, did you have another question?
No, actually, I didn't.
I saw another hand up. Okay, did you have anything you wanted to add, Representative Ramirez?
No, ma'am.
You're supposed to go, huh?
You may speak. You may speak.
Thank you. Members of the committee, I'm grateful that in the waning hours of this session that you're going to take up this bill. I was physically small in school. I had the benefit of good hearing, but it's difficult for those that suffer from a disability. And one of the things that has made me a great advocate of this bill are those newborns that are going to be identified early, who are going to be able to pursue treatment. Thank you. Who are going to be able to pursue treatment because they were directed to option A, B, C, D, or F, and will find it in some manner. And I believe that the potential savings to the state of Alaska and the K-12 process will be positive. I think that the intangible benefits for some families will be recognized, and I really see it as a little bit like power windows, which some time ago were a luxury on a vehicle, and now although you can get a roll-up windows, power windows are almost standard in any vehicle package, and I see that putting this into the birthing package to me is really quite comparable. It's something that some time ago may have been seen as an extra, but now it's almost a standard amenity. I think that it will make for healthier children. I think that there will be significant savings realized in our K-12 education, at which time hearing losses that weren't identified at birth become the burden of the state of Alaska through its education process. And I think that this program will pay for itself many times over in intangible ways, as well as in savings through the education process. I think it's good public policy.
Thank you. Thanks. Are there any questions of the sponsor? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. Is there a provision for those who have the means to pay for the initial screening themselves versus making this an automatic program paid for by the state? There's no means test?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, the initial hearing screening is already included in the birthing package, those costs.
So just the cost is the follow-up?
It, too, is part of the mandate on the insurance coverage. If you'll look on page 3, section 5, line 19, if the initial screening under one of the subsection determines that the child may have a hearing impairment, a confirmatory hearing diagnostic evaluation is part of the coverage.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, can I just comment on that? Senator Bunny, right now, if your child does, in the initial screening, is considered questionable or is definitely hearing impaired, it's the responsibility of the parents to follow up on that and to paper it if it's not covered by some other third party.
I think I understood in one that it's actually in most coverage.
Yeah,
it's just it's my understanding, but it's still the idea that we mandate a product that's to be sold to a customer. To me, is a real bad is bad policy, and we do have before us version I. Senator Wilson, can I get you to move version I as our working draft? I forgot.
Madam Chair, move the committee adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 109, version I, dated 5-6, is our working document.
Okay. And I think the primary difference in this is the date of implementation, which is on the last page. It's 2008 is the effective date. Is there any more questions? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, in response to Senator Stedman, I think the bill needs some more work, but at the same time, I don't know what other work could be done on it. I mean, at the risk of repeating myself, I don't think they've made a case that either the department nor the sponsor has made a case that it's needed. But I mean, I have no problem at all voting no and on the floor and saying my piece. I don't think there's any reason to keep in the committee because I don't know what else they could do to make it better.
Well, I'll just open it up to the committee and ask you what is the will of the committee on the passage or keeping this bill. Senator Bundy.
I would move that we report Senate CS for 109 out of committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? There being no objection, House Bill 109 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
And after we had House Bill 190 yesterday, some folks talked to me and said they would like the opportunity to talk to Dwayne Bannock and see if they could work out some of the differences. Come on up. And so we're bringing back 190 before us. And do we have amendments or a CS before us?
I have a series of amendments, I believe.
Okay. Oh, I see your name on them. Thank you.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm easily confused, but today I think I'm not. I've got two 109 packages and no 190.
Well.
And they both have my name on it, so.
Does either of them say required ID for purchase of alcohol?
Yes, mine does. One's 190 and one's 109.
Just move the zero around, you'll be okay.
It's a dyslexic one.
Thank you.
Did you find it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. We can always get other copies if we're running short. So we do have back before us the version we were listening to yesterday, which is version U. And do you want to bring us up to date, please? Give your name and.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, Paula Bull, Representative Foster's office. We worked out several technical issues with Mr. Bannock at DMV, and there are both amendments and there has been a CS prepared with all that language in there, and whichever you would care me to present, I'm willing to go either way.
Okay, you have a CS?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go ahead and take it by amendment, and then Senator Bundy can help us explain as well as you, and then we'll just have a version U amended. Senator Bundy?
Madam Chair, and I'm simply the vehicle. The answers
okay,
are down
okay, he'll
there.
Get to explain? So okay.
I would move on amendment number one. Object for explanation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, unfortunately, it doesn't look like the amendments are numbered, so.
Amendment number one, Madam Chair, for
okay, mine are not
committee's
numbered.
Information. It begins page 2, line 11, following justification.
Okay.
It's in the upper right-hand corner, uniform, point one.
Thank you. Okay, amendment number one would be the case that was brought up to deal with timing of the revocation of the license. And basically what this amendment is going to do is make it so that the license is only canceled for the duration for which the prohibition on consumption is issued. And after that time, their license would be reverted back into the active status. So that the original license, if they had not surrendered it to the court, would still be a valid driver's license.
Okay. And do all the references in that amendment refer to the same topic? And they're just the different sites?
Madam Chair, yes, they do. A slight other change in there has been that in a couple different sections, the term has been deleted, and the word is okay. Put in there to keep tense cleaner and, I guess, more grammatically correct.
Are there any questions about the amendment? If not,
I'll remove my objection.
And amendment number one is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move amendment number two. It is in the upper right-hand corner, uniform, point two, and begins page 2, line 9.
Madam Chair, this amendment will change the jurisdictional clause within line 9 and 11 on page 2, also affecting line 8 and line 9 on pages 4. And basically, it will limit the scope to other municipal ordinances rather than all laws and ordinances of a similar nature, which is currently the language.
Okay, just really limits it to the municipal ordinance.
Correct.
Okay. Any questions about amendment number two? You want to
remove
your objection?
Remove
okay.
My
amendment number two
objection.
Is adopted.
And I move amendment number three and object for discussion. It is begins page 3, line 18.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, this amendment would simply change the marking on the driver's license or state ID from ROC, which meant restriction on consumption, to COAR, which would be court-ordered alcohol restriction.
Okay. Court-ordered alcohol restriction.
Madam Chair, I believe this would put the person involved between a rock and a hard place.
Okay. Are there any questions about amendment number three?
I remove my objection.
And you remove your objection. There being no further objection, amendment number three is adopted. Is there any further information you want to share with us? I saw someone. Oh, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. You had a conversation with Mr. Bannock yesterday?
Correct.
How would you characterize that conversation?
Senator Wilkin through the chair. I'm sorry. I was trying to figure out the process again. Probably somewhat uncomfortable for both of us.
Okay. Is Mr. Bannock online to help us? He had some significant concerns yesterday. And as I said yesterday, I think a lot of what he has done and will do at DMV, is he with us to talk about the changes?
He will not be testifying today. Mm-hmm. However, Carrie Hennings of DMV is online.
Yeah. Madam Chair, could we have him at ease before we
at ease, please.
Get into this?
Well, looking.
So I just want to work through this DMV issue. So Mr. Bannock is not here because he's in trial. So is there someone to speak for him to tell us the department's position on the newly amended bill?
Senator Wilkins, through the chair, I believe that his assistant is online.
Carrie Hennings is online. Would you like to talk? Should we have Carrie testify?
Sure. I'd like to know what Mr. Bannock thinks. And if Carrie can speak for Mr. Bannock, that's fine. It's my understanding that Mr. Bannock was not happy with the conversation yesterday and found it to be rude, intrusive. And Mr. Bannock, I believe, if I might paraphrase, I would suggest that any director has an opportunity to present his opinions anytime he wants at this committee or any place else. But having said that, I don't have anything from writing, and I'm concerned about what we're putting on him and whether these amendments alleviate some of the concerns that he had yesterday. And I just said to Representative Crawford, I'm sorry that we're hearing this on day 120, but this is not insignificant legislation. And when one of our departments says we have a problem, I think we should pay attention. So with that, I would like to hear from DMV.
Okay. Carrie Hennings, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any testimony?
Thank you, Chair Green and the committee members. For the record, I'm Carrie Hennings, manager of driver's licensing with DMV. Director Bannock, sorry he can't be attending today, but he is testifying in court. And he's asked me to relate to the committee that the technical issues specific to DMV implementation of this bill have been resolved, and we have no further objections on any of the technical issues.
Do you have objection on any other issues, ma'am?
Not at this point, no. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Stedman.
So is the department in support of this bill?
I think the department no longer objects to the issues they brought up yesterday. I would probably suggest there are still philosophical differences, and they don't believe that this Mr. Bannock has joined us from Kenai. Dwayne Bannock.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I just raced from the courthouse across the street to the LIO office and saw you good people on TV and kind of invited myself in.
Good. Join us. Where are we?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I could not say any better the words that you just surmised. So I got here about 2 minutes ago. I heard Ms. Henning's comment. She and I have discussed this. She's right on the money, and your assessment is 100% correct.
Very good. But I had assured the sponsor that we would hear this again and address the concerns, and if the committee felt differently after hearing this, we would move it on. If not, we'll deal with it. Senator Bundy.
Well, thank you, madam. I'm very interested and concerned about the technical aspects when it comes to policy or philosophical discussions. I think they take place in the legislature and not in the bureaucracy. So I'm ready to make a motion if you're ready for a motion.
Go right ahead.
No, I've moved that we move from committee, Senate CS for House Bill 190 with attached, as amended, with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations.
Object.
There is objection. Do anyone want to speak to their objection, or shall we call the roll? Senator Wilkins.
Madam Chair, I just would say for the record, I don't think this bill is ready to move on. It needs additional help. It needs some work, and it can certainly be brought back in January. Probably a good bill, but I would like to have everybody on board, and I don't think everybody's on board for a number of reasons. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mindy, roll please.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
No.
Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
No.
Senator Green?
No.
Four yeas, three nays.
And with four, three House Bill 109 moves from committee with individual 190 moves from committee with individual recommendation and attach zero fiscal notes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Before we go into executive session on one minor issue, I do want to thank everyone for a fun 2 years and a very interesting 2 years with lots of learning going on, and I appreciate the work of everyone, and certainly I know Senator Wilkin probably has some comments he would like to add, and it's been a trip, and I appreciate everyone's attendance and knowledge, and have grown to appreciate the strengths and that each of us has and that we can bring to some very complicated issues and discussions. Senator Wilkin, can I?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think we all come to this building because there's nothing else to do here but work. So, and you get on this committee and you work, and I think we're all proud of that. But our work doesn't get done without good leadership, and I appreciate you staying with us and guiding us. And at the same time, nothing gets done without our wonderful staff. And each of us have a finance staffer that's helped by other people in our office, and we thank them. And then, of course, to keep us all straight and make it look like we all know what we're doing, we've got Mindy and Rose and Robin and the others in this room. So we applaud them too, and I know you do too, and thank them for all their professionalism to make us the best we can be and make us do the best work that we can that we can do. And
with here.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Okay, we have one issue that needs to be decided, and it will be an executive session. So we will executive session. So we will clear the room, except for. I move that the Senate Finance Committee go into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B1 and 3 for discussion of matters, the immediate knowledge of which would adversely affect the finances of a government unit, and the discussion of a matter that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following staff remain in the room to assist the committee: Ginger Blaisdell, Jan Price, Tina Strong, and Sheila Peterson. Is there any objection? Thank you. If everyone will clear, except Ginger, Jan, Tina, and Sheila. Wordies. We make the transition. Public general session. And I move the award of RFP 432, Medicaid Program Review and Consultation, to the Specific Health Policy Group in an amount not to exceed $234,200. Is there objection? The motion is accepted, and the Specific Health Policy Group will be notified by Jan Price and Ginger's fair hands. And we did have, if you've noticed on the listing, we had people from some of our offices, some of the folks we felt would be have the expertise to be evaluating and seeing all those things. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? Again, I thank all of you for two years. For the last time, we hope. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much. That we are adjourned.
No meeting tomorrow.